Hello, welcome everyone again to Ecosystemic Futures, the podcast brought to you by SocialWorks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautic Solutions Project. I'm your host, Diane Finkhausen, founder and CEO of SocialWorks and the Ecosystemic Futures series. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, economic models are reshaping fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we innovate and build for ecosystemic resilience. In this series, we're exploring these new ecosystemic models and the impacts they'll have on our collective future. And in this episode, we'll wrap up our conversation on artificial intelligence and what that means for our collective futures. How do we design for ecosystemic resilience and more beneficial outcomes for humanity? So my co-host today is James Villarubia. James is a White House Presidential Innovation Fellow and Digital Strategist for NASA Convergent Aeronautic Solutions Project. James, welcome back.
Thanks, Diane. So excited to be here again and to continue this conversation. Fun. I've had so much fun so far. For the audience, again, sort of my background and sort of role at NASA is to help NASA use AI in new and interesting ways. So this episode really sort of drives at the specific conversations that we are having today. So really excited to hear Pascal's input on this topic.
Fantastic. Yeah, so I'm super excited. So Pascal, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Share a little bit of background on your introduction for our audience that are just tuning in today.
Yeah, very briefly, grew up in Germany. I was part of the first dot-com boom, which probably ages me if you do the math on it, but then was very fortunate to be in really interesting roles in some of the more relevant companies which shaped our internet world, including eBay in the early days, Mozilla, the Firefox web browser, where I led innovation and brought this organization to 500 million users all across the internet, did some time at google.org, and then did my own companies and spent a bunch of time with Singularity University, which is a think tank based out of Silicon Valley. And today we are focusing on supporting leaders to better anticipate the future. So what better topic to talk about than the future of AI?
Fantastic. Pascal, I'm such a big fangirl of all the organizations that you have helped shape and your digital thumbprint there. So You're behind a lot of the big questions that have been shaping a lot of futures, a lot of innovation horizons, and of course, the technologies that are shaping our journey in industry and humanity. If we think about some of those big questions that you've been kind of poking and prodding at over the past few decades and kind of focus in on what you think AI can unlock, how does AI begin to shape our world in the years to come? How can we start to think about some of those unimpossible futures that are getting unlocked as we speak with the deployment of AI?
I believe we need to get ready for an increasingly weird world we're living in. I just give you one very interesting example. I recently had this conversation with a friend of mine who's in the consulting world, and he mentioned that he realized that one of his colleagues sent him an email, which was essentially generated by an AI based on a couple bullet points as a meeting summarization. And then the AI blew it out into like 5-paragraph email, beautifully written in his voice because it was trained on his old email corpus. And then he said, I didn't actually read that email, but I had my AI summarize the email back into 5 bullet points. So now we're having this. And this sounds really funny, but we've got this really interesting world, which is essentially mediated by your AI talking to my AI. And I believe that we will move increasingly into a world where this will happen. So think about the consumption of news and information, like financial information. If you're in the financial industry, you're already using a ton of tools which scour the internet, scour financial markets, etc., compress this information down and present it to you in a summarized form, in a shaped form. All of these systems come with their own perspectives, not to say even biases of this world. So it's an interesting world we're moving into. And I do believe that the best way to manage this is to start building muscle memory, to start exploring this, to start trying these things out, to really wrap your head around what's actually going on. And the danger of these systems is that they evolve so incredibly fast. So I've been doing this whole technology game for whatever, 30 years now. And this truly feels to me like the first time I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh my God, like I just can't keep up with it anymore. So I need my AI to like figure this stuff out and like compress it down because I just can't keep up with the changes anymore. So we better get on the train and get on the train fast. I think that's in my world, it's the most important thing. And in previous episodes, James and I riffed on a couple sports metaphors. And I do think it's incredibly important it's like sports. You can talk, in my case, I can talk about baseball as much as I want. I don't understand, as a German, I don't understand the sport. Maybe if I were to get on the playing field and actually play a couple rounds of baseball, I would probably understand the game much better. So I think that's what it is about. So getting onto the field and then starting playing the game.
That's great. Yes, a lot of sports metaphors. I will try to use fewer this episode, Pascal, for you. So I think, you talked about getting ready for weird, which I appreciate. But one of the things you mentioned at the end of our last episode, and for our listeners, a quick repeat would be great. Sort of this idea of sort of potentially new Turing test around an AI actually creating a business fully on its own. You give it a $100,000 investment, it creates a $1 million business, and how that will sort of radically change the ecosystem, or certainly the economy, the whole economy, and of course, all the ripple effects out of that. So that's a weird outcome for a C-suite to deal with. So how would you recommend, if I'm a technologist, if I'm a CTO, and I'm trying to help my board understand or prep or think about what the next 5 to 10 years would be for a business as we sort of think about where to invest, what do you suggest that looks like? How do we harness that technology? How do we avoid missteps? What are your recommendations?
So Andrew Ng, who's a professor over at Stanford, probably one of the leading authorities on this whole topic of AI, runs a bunch of companies, et cetera. He pointed out recently, which I think is a very astute observation. He said that back in the day when we wrote normal software, we spent about 80% of your time writing the code and then 20% of time testing it and debugging it. And that equation, because AI moves so fast and allows us to do many things so fast, has actually flipped. Now we're spending 20% of our time writing the software, and we need to spend 80% of our time debugging it, making sure that it doesn't hallucinate, et cetera, et cetera. But what this allows us to do, and I think this is the important insight, is it allows us to try out things way faster than ever before. I give you a very concrete example. I was literally on the phone yesterday with a friend of mine. They run a big conference, and they've got all these breakout rooms, and he was thinking about, how do I get the information which is being discussed in the breakout rooms together, summarized, and share it with all of the participants so that you avoid FOMO, fear of missing out. And in the old days, you would have had like, there's someone sitting in each of those breakout rooms taking copious notes, and then you put them onto a website, whatever. What he's now doing is, and I suggested trying this out, is OpenAI has a product called Whisper, which is a speech-to-text software, which is incredibly good. So all you need to do is you upload a sound file, and then it basically transcribes it. Costs you literally pennies. And it's 2 lines of Python code to implement it. So you record every single one of these breakout rooms. You send it to Whisper within 2 minutes. You have full transcripts. Then you take that transcript and send it to GPT-4 and ask GPT-4 to summarize it, which is another 4 lines of code and cost you pennies. And then you take that output and write a little bit of like a robotic process automation to then send it out to every one of the participants. So within essentially like the moment people walk out of a breakout room, the summary is already written, the summary is done, and it's being distributed to everybody. And my point here is, this is 10 lines of Python code, and I know most people don't write Python code, but if it's 10 lines of Python code, pretty much anybody, you know, who has some understanding of computer science can actually do it for you. So really start trying these things out. Understand that they will not be perfect, but really get into this mode of agility, of trying things out to like really iterate your way forward. I do not think that anyone can create a 5-year AI strategy at the moment, or a 3-year strategy. Just like the space is moving so fast. So the only way you can move forward is essentially understand what your North Star is, where do you want to go, and then stumble forward. A friend of mine once called this the drunken walk of the entrepreneur, to stretch another metaphor here. And really, it feels that way, but it's the only way I know how you can actually move forward in this world.
I love that. I'm using that, the drunken walk of the entrepreneur. I'm clinging onto that one. So much of this conversation reminds me, I'm going to fire up the Wayback Machine a bit, but the work that I did at GE was to experiment with basically the gig economy. How could we kind of disassemble the business model and experiment with a more granular approach to putting components and resources and capabilities together that in a way that would exponentially kind of drive a better performance and experience. And so we applied open innovation, open talent, and digital tools in a way that it broke some of them, kind of the barnacles off of the battleship, if you will, and provided us greater agility, greater elasticity, just by reaching into the gig economy. So we didn't have to employ all the smartest people on our balance sheet. We could basically use the global brain in a way that drove better outcomes for the markets that we serve, for the investors that entrusted their resources to us. So we were basically, with that model, with an ecosystemic model, inverting the firm, leveraging digital first, flex second, and fixed resources last. So we inverted the firm. So this inversion paradigm that I'm hearing in the what AI is unlocking for us, right, Andrew's observation that 80% of our time writing the code, 20% debugging, we can invert that with the technological unlock. I think that inversion paradigm applies to basically everything. To your earlier point, we can reimagine everything. Mm-hmm. So do we end up on the beach, all of us? Does humanity end up on the beach with a sippy cup of our favorite libation while basically AI and technology runs the business, right? To what degree does AI and technology replace what we've relied on humanity to execute, right? Or what remains the proprietary domain of kind of the human condition? Where do we start to see that inversion strike a new normal in what drives our economy, what drives policy, what drives society?
Yeah, it's really funny because in Econ 101 class, they teach you something called the fixed labor fallacy or the lump of labor fallacy. So this idea that there's only a certain amount of work to be done, a certain amount, the pie is only that size, and we divide it up. And the fear you hear a lot of people now talk about, of course, with AI is that AI will eat up more and more pies of that, pieces of the pie, and basically we all end up unemployed, or if you talk to the utopists, we all will sit on the beach and become poets. I don't think that's a very likely outcome for a couple reasons. One is the lump of labor fallacy teaches us that never in human history was that actually true. So we always generate more. That's what growth ultimately is. So what happens here is, and I think that's an important point here, is if you think about the role of an accountant, like whatever, 30, 40 years ago before the advent of personal computers, accounting was done on paper. And then we got Excel and Lotus and whatever, QuickBooks and so on. And suddenly is not being done on paper anymore. It's done on spreadsheets, etc. So it suddenly becomes much more efficient to do. Do we have less accountants today? No, actually not. We've got more accountants, because what we do is now, we now have accountants answer questions we couldn't even ask before. And the exact same thing will happen with AI. What this means, though, is, and this is like without a doubt, and this is definitely a disruptive change, is that the professions will change. The work you do will change. So again, if you were very proficient in filling out a paper spreadsheet, which, by the way, you can still buy on Amazon. I find this really hilarious. You can literally buy stacks of spreadsheet paper on Amazon. So if you were very proficient at filling this stuff out, and now suddenly you find yourself in front of an Apple IIe using a spreadsheet program for the first time, it feels very different. It is very different. And you need to reskill and upskill. Yeah. That will happen without a doubt, and it will be very disruptive. And we need to, as a society, need to prepare ourselves for it. And we need to protect those who are probably most exposed to that and least prepared for it. But overall, the idea that there is not enough work for us to do, I absolutely detest. If you just look at some of the world's biggest problems, I literally this morning read that the head of the United Nations just started calling climate change not global warming, but global boiling. Now, which like scared the bejewels out of me. So if you think about the problems we have there, there is a lot of work we have to do as humanity. So again, like, we're not shy of work.
Yeah. So right. In those conversations that we had, right, when the gig economy and kind of the open models started to really open up new design, organizational design opportunities for us, the conversation that we love to wrestle with was, does our company want to be 300,000 employees or 30,000 employees? Mm-hmm. Does this new model allow us to own the basically fixed resource base down, or do we retain kind of the same size? And really the right conversation was, it wants to be 300,000 and just capture so much more of that opportunity landscape. It's an abundance mindset that we need to embrace as humanity, not a scarcity mindset, an innovation mindset, not a productivity mindset. Productivity needs to be focused on how can we deliver greater value and greater experiences and abundant outcomes versus reduce cost, raise. It's a real mindset shift that we need to make sure is basically systemic in order to shape the right design and the right outcomes and expectations and experience. James, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The example that sort of struck in my mind is the classic sort of Luddite, which is now literally the term for someone who's aversion to new technology. But I mean, if you go back in the history books, the English Luddites were, I think, were like weavers, loom workers, and the mechanical looms came in and sort of disrupted their livelihood. The problem was not that they are like, oh, I hate the concept of technology. The problem was that it sort of disrupted their labor, disrupted their ability to sort of feed their families, and was radical and overnight. So what I am sort of seeing now is that we have sort of a generation, and I'll count myself as an elder millennial. We have a generation of people sort of who pursued arts and the creative space because we're told a creative is like protected. It may not pay as well, but it is hard to replicate art. And then they are scared out of their minds because of the introduction of Stable Diffusion and now DALL-E and Midjourney is blowing everyone away. So I mean, I think that whole ecosystem is trying to deal with that. And that's almost an overnight change. And to your point, Pascal, on the technical space, I mean, I can imagine hiring as a CTO, hiring engineers that are not writing APIs, because the way we have sort of instructions for people to sort of in systems to change information, they are written for humans to understand, but for machines to use. And if the human doesn't need to understand it, if like, well, I'm writing this so my machine understands it and can access it better, that's a different skill set. And suddenly you can even sort of step one more, like, what's after that? And I think sort of the GANs, generative adversarial networks, where they sort of two AIs taught themselves how to talk to each other in an encrypted format. They were much more performant at figuring out how to talk to each other. And I can see even that role eventually going away. It's like, let the AI decide how to write the API to talk to other AIs. So all these things sort of coming in, I see this sort of not repetition of history, but at least rhyming of history, that it's not the change itself, it's the speed of change that I think is going to be most disruptive. I mean, how do you think we can get ahead of that from a sort of like, what's the good path and what's sort of the worst case scenario with that sort of focus on speed of change in our society?
Yeah, I think for me personally, it goes back to a couple of things. So one is, and we talked about this at length already, is like this idea that you have to be in the game to play the game. So I think that's happening on a personal level and on a company level, organizational level, et cetera. I do think, though, that there is a role for societal organizations, governments, whatever you want to pick there, to play where, as these systems have very disruptive potential, we also need to be a little bit more careful about these systems and not only do a let's throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks and let's run fast and break things, as Mark Zuckerberg famously once proclaimed being the motto or mantra for what was then Facebook. I do believe that breaking things, the consequences of breaking things these days can become really big. We see this with mis and disinformation at the moment when we use these systems to create deep fakes, for example. So I do think that there's a role of responsibly rolling out these technologies, both on the commercial space, as well as I do think societal bodies like governments, for example, have a role to play here. So it's a little bit of a balancing act, I think, we need to play just because the space moves so fast.
I think that's such an important point, right? So much of the kind of the entrepreneurial badge of honor for the past few decades has been to launch, learn, refine, run fast and break things. But now that has bigger implications, and that has ecosystemic implications rippling across basically networks of interconnected actors, right? So we do have, I think, a new layer of responsibility and accountability and a need for transparency and understanding that might be a little bit more pronounced with these new capabilities than we might have experienced in the decades past. But with that, we will need to wrap up this discussion, as much as I hate to do it, because this has been incredible. Thank you again for walking us through this fascinating journey and discussion and helping us to rethink really the perspective and potential responsibility and unimpossible futures that can be unlocked with some of these new capabilities. We will keep an eye on your digital wake, keeping an eye on how you chase and lead in this space. And we sure appreciate your time here with us today. James, thank you. This was an incredible discussion, as always, and a lot of fun. So audience, if you have just joined us for this episode, please be sure to catch up on the two previous episodes with Pascal Finette on artificial intelligence and its implications, consequences, limits, and potential. Do join us for the next Ecosystemic Futures podcast series, brought to you by Shoshanworks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, where we'll continue to explore topics with leading experts and how we can collectively design for ecosystemic resilience. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite place to access podcasts. And as always, you can learn more at shoshanworks.com. Thanks, everyone.